Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, and I should have asked you how to pronounce your name. I'm going to mispronounce it real quick. Mauro Frau?
That's the best try a foreigner ever attempted. Yeah.
Okay. How you doing?
Mauro Frau, but yeah, it sounds good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So this is the part of the podcast where I ask our guests, which is yourself, a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you are right now, where you're heading.
All right. Okay. So I'm originally from Italy. I've been around the planet, mainly working on VFX. Being bouncing sometimes back and forth between game industry and movie industry. And I've been back to Europe, and I set up this studio called Treehouse Ninjas with my friend Zoltan. And we just tried, basically it's just a gathering of people that have been around a lot and sort of tired of working on like huge corporate environments and would like to do something independent, but still high quality. And so we thought we would go for something a bit special to stand out. So we try to approach our projects with making the most of these hybrid backgrounds that we have, because we have 50% movie industry people, 50% game industry people in terms of backgrounds. So that's, I think, what makes us special. We had the fortune to work on very cool franchises and lots of interesting stuff and develop our own approach to our project and gain some reputability, let's say. It's still a small studio. So I guess that's where we're at.
Yeah, I was first introduced with the talk that you did back in 2017. I believe the title was Convergence of Movies and Games. And it's a trend. Mm-hmm. That I've largely seen. I think the beginnings of it was kind of like what you guys were doing with Unity, where you're using game engines to kind of make these great short films, basically, all real time. And since then, I think a lot of your prophecy is becoming true more than ever now. I think a little background for listeners out there, you know, Mandalorian famously is using virtual backgrounds. All right. Of course, it kind of started in garage, smaller studio settings, but now it's like on the grand stage of ILM. Right. And now that's that process of using engine real-time effects on sets is kind of branching out to other Star Wars TV shows that they have planned. We're talking about Marvel movies now using the same technique, like Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So we're seeing a lot of these other industry folks starting to utilize the advantages of real-time engines in the immediate response, I think, with the workflow. Of course, you expected this to happen. Do you expect it to happen this quickly? Was it on par of what you were thinking was going to happen with everyone kind of wanting in this workflow?
I would say pretty much yes. Yes. I mean, it was about time, to be honest. Like for all of us old VFX people, we have so many memories of not having a clue of what we're doing in like having to use our experience to visualize what we're doing, because all we see are wireframes and like previews of very complex scenes, maybe through proxies and whatnot. And then having to put huge renders on render farms to hope that everything is okay in the morning after. Looking at around 2014, 2015, you know, when there was a big VR boom. And at the same time, you would see the first very convincing experiments out of Unreal, but out of Unity and out of also the several games, they were starting to give these clues of like, yes, this is actually happening. Like this, there is a light transmission accuracy that is starting to be very convincing. It's not quite as like in offline rendering, but the projection is getting there. And so that obviously created a lot of buzz in the VFX industry, instantly thinking, you know, and like fantasizing about when this whole thing about not being able to see real time all the changes will actually, you know, when the things will change, because obviously, you know, politically and or in terms of organization, it's really hard to interact, and you know, the movie industry is very layered, so you don't get a shot approved on the go. It goes through several reviewing processes, and sometimes you might get a lot of work reshuffled by the final voice coming out from the movie director for a small, tiny camera change. And that would generate lots of repercussions downstream. When things can be visualized real time, obviously that changes everything. And, you know, a lot of nightmares are now in the past.
Yeah, I think at first, we were starting to see that. I have a lot of friends, and I'm sure you probably have a lot of mutual friends that like studios like Third Floor, you know, they're kind of famous for pre-vising. And mm-hmm. I think really early on, maybe 2016, 2015, they were using game engines to help with the pre-viz and skipping the whole Maya process, right? And now we're starting that transition with Mandalorian using it as background drops for their sets.
That's an extra thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And since, so obviously the next question would be, you know, it's only a matter of time that the real-time effects or real-time backdrops will start getting more and more closer in the front of the camera, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think of that? Is that going to be happening in a couple of years? What's missing to unlock that fully? Is it just director's technique or preference? What's keeping from eliminating the whole processing of film?
Right. If I get your question right, I would say it's not that easy. My bet, if you want a bet, is still on AR, goggles and glasses. That's the most interesting thing. There is a lot of huge investment into LED walls, but honestly, history teaches us that anything that is huge, bulky, and expensive eventually will see its way out. Somebody clever will manage to find that awkward and just not optimal anymore, and we will evolve from that. So I'm observing, honestly, like everybody else. I wouldn't feel comfortable over betting, jumping on 2 feet, over investing a lot of money on huge LED walls, unless I'm a huge corporation that really can afford to invest and losing money. Because really what I think that is keeping us from having an entire film crew on set visualizing real time the same thing in AR goggles is the technology is the current state of the art of the tech of batteries. So the reason why AR is very bulky and cumbersome eventually is because it's really demanding in terms of energy. So you would go around like Ghostbusters with a huge backpack of batteries if you want to actually perform the operation that an Unreal Engine would be performing. It will drain out of energy in no time. There has been very interesting advancement in battery technology and engineering just the last year. And they are breaking new barriers. So I think the answer is in that. In the day where AR goggles will perform running real-time photorealistic environments over multiple users with fluid response, we will all be shooting movies with little goggles, and whatever the world around us it's going to be defined by you know, I mean, the sky is the limit at that point. And there is still a lot of questions though about you know, real time lighting and how the immersion of an actor helps the performance of the actor himself or herself. Those things in a half physical environment really change a lot. If you imagine actors of all generations, especially dealing with performances that are completely virtual, it's a very hard transition in what you're asking them to do. Maybe it's going to take a generational change of actors able to perform with fully virtual interaction with other actors that don't exist maybe. So it's very layered, but I think these are the ingredients. We're talking about speculations here, so it's difficult.
Yeah, I think it's an added plus for actors with this advancement, at least with the lit backgrounds, that they're glad that they're not having to act and imagine things on a green screen. I think it's a huge plus, and overall the end product does improve, right? Because the performance is not just pretending anymore, which is a large part of the visual effects. I always feel bad when I see those behind the scenes
absolutely yeah
clips, and they're like, imagine a big dragon coming at you. It's yeah. Like, oh my god, you're asking too much. And I think it's too technical. I think wavered in our favor for post effects to be applied to kind of make the actors kind of like a side thing now, which you know, the camera's on them for a reason, right? Where we want their to be imparted with them. So
if you think about it, it's a bit like, you know, artists in any VFX or game industry, sometimes the tech changes so quickly that it's much faster than the training process that we go through, you know. So it's difficult because, you know, new generations are born with a technology that eventually, by the time they are performing as professionals, it's already old. And so you start betting on the newer generation, but then eventually the curve of what we can learn as analog human beings doesn't change as much as fast as the curve of how technology is improving. So we, as analog monkeys as we are, so we might be left behind eventually. Computers will take over. I don't know.
The AI generated Steven Spielberg. I forgot how many years back, but I did see like an AI driven, like a trailer or something, right? It was something a few years back where we're like a trailer was generated by a AI, and it was just a few inputs on the human side to say.
Yeah, I might have seen that.
Well, that was interesting, and then kind of disappeared.
I'm not surprised. How many times we had jokes about the trailer generators? Like, you can overlap trailers of so many franchises, and the formula is always exactly the same. You know? So, not that surprising.
Yeah, I mean, just anything with rules. I mean, we generate these rules of how entertainment should be portrayed, right? There's definitely a nuance to every genre that we introduce. It's like, all right, with every horror movie, especially movies, right? Because there is a linear path with movies. Mm-hmm. There's three acts to every movie, and then it is very mathematical. And it isn't so crazy to think that an AI can just take those rules and
there are definitely formulas that you can apply. And in that sense, I think video games, they have an edge over movies because they're non-linear. And there is this sort of, I mean, the idea of fun is still a bit of a quicksand subject. Game design is a bit of a more layered topic to nail properly, successfully, than, you know, linear storytelling and visual composition, visual storytelling in general. You can more successfully plot a product that works using visual storytelling rule books. It's a bit harder to pull out a fun experience out of strict rule books. A small shift in the way you apply rules, you know, in a game, in balance, in the mechanics, can really decide. You know, it's a very elusive topic. Fun sometimes in games, so maybe that one is something that is a bit more difficult to put down in an AI system.
There was an interesting part of your talk that I remembered. So obviously now we're seeing the convergence. It's here, right? It's happening. Movies are taking advantage of the tool set that game developers have been enjoying for a while for real-time feedback. And then gamers have always been borrowing from movies for inspiration for as long as it's been around. But there is this third lane that I feel like it's starting to be explored. And you kind of talked about it a bit, like when these tools are available and the layeredness of games being an advantage over film, there's going to be a third avenue where we're seeing it a bit with Netflix was playing around with a bit where they were making shows and movies interactive, or like pick your own adventure type of things, right? We saw that with what is that show that always ends up bad? That famous one, I forgot.
The Bandersnatch.
Yeah, that one. But that show itself, and then the one with the technical warnings and stuff. It's completely slipping my mind. Let me look at it. It's gonna kill me.
I think Zodiac, maybe.
Yeah. It's one of the. It's that British show that everyone likes.
Mosaic.
Kevin, okay. You'll try it, right?
Yeah. Whatever the case, there is this third medium, yeah, with like choose your adventure, mm-hmm, that's being explored, and they're kind of testing the grounds. But I would love to kind of hear you kind of retracing those steps that you talked about, and what is that future when, mm-hmm, it's not exactly games and it's not exactly movie. It's going to be its own thing. And it's kind of riding off of what you're saying about AR powered entertainment, right? Once they figure out the battery problem, it's going to be a whole set of different directors, whole generation of content makers to make this third lane possible.
Yes, I think it's an interesting limbo that it also comes from this sort of sad realization of seeing movies, especially mainstream movies, really being over and over same, right? And it's just like sequel of sequel and prequel and sequel, and then eventually you're watching the same soup reserved and reheated. And games are not yet there. Is a younger medium, but I don't think there are two. I mean, they are sort of in the same trajectory. There are lots of products that are sort of starting to feel like lacking ideas and going for scale rather than you know, novelty. So seeing both games and movies, you know, endangered by this saturation of contents, it's cool to see that they might, you know, gain from each other the best ingredients that they have, and then have this like hybrid future where they would influence each other. And you know, the choose your own adventure kind of situation is a bit of the most probably the first idea that would come at mind. But if you think about it, like in the moment where we have a movie that it's already been shot in a virtual environment, like, because imagine that it's been fully realized inside of a non-existing virtual world that is fully photorealistic, and the crew was on in that world when they were shooting. In the moment that data is actually, how to say, affordable to run in home computer systems, and today home computers are insanely powerful, you might have just think of reproposing the movie world for the audiences to use, to step in. You know, imagine like you watch a movie and you like it, and then you just like walk inside of it back again. This is why in the talk I've been mentioning a crazy thing as like emergent movie making, which would be like movies made with multiple things happening. I don't know if you remember a movie like, for example, like Quentin Tarantino, it was Four Rooms. Quentin Tarantino and Altman, those postmodern directors of like the 90s, they were experimenting a lot with telling you the same story from multiple perspectives. And it was so interesting, right? You would discover certain things about a story, but then eventually they would tell you the same exact story back in time, and they would tell you what was happening in the same moment, but in the next room, And you would figure out element, inclusion, ingredients of the same story. They would just like twist your reading of the same story. So we might want to just to think of movies that are crafted that way, with the idea of like, me as a director, I give you one take on the story, but then you as an audience, you step in and you make your own movie, or just like exploit the world more. It's an idea that actually puts its roots in sandbox games, or in even stuff like Dreams or even Minecraft, when it's not just about what we as content creator force you to experience, but it's also giving you something that you can pull out something out of it with your own hands as a player, as an audience. So it's this hybrid situation that is really attractive. And that's also about the reasons and the spirit behind having set up these Treehouse Ninjas studios and having tried to keep it hybrid with people from movies and people for games, and see if we can get an edge over, embracing these thoughts and catching trains that might pass, and they might be very invisible to the most people. And maybe we can try as an independent studio experimenting things that you, as a corporation, you really cannot.
Yeah, it's huge. Well, I would love to kind of dig into that a bit. You mentioned you got a group of your friends and colleagues together to experiment, to pave the future. You're a very introspective guy, obviously. A lot of your thoughts are very intriguing. I wish we had more dedicated game developers thinking like this, because I do think, I've said it many times on the podcast, if we're ever to head towards the Matrix, right, which is the ultimate not goal, but I would say the danger, right? It would be a game developer. It would be powered by Unity or Unreal, right? that's really, everything's converging to that point. But I believe you guys are in Hungary, Budapest.
Right? We are, yeah.
Okay. So like, how did that, did you have a background in creating startups? Like, that must have been an adventure in itself, right? I would love to kind of hear about that. Okay.
Yeah. That's where my partner Zoltan comes at play, because he's the producer, right? I'm the creative director. He's the managing director. So this is that kind of stuff. When somebody asks me, lots of people obviously dream about having their own studio and setting things up. And I always suggest, if you're an artist, really consider partnering with somebody that is a production person, somebody that has that mindset. We are two archetypes of brains that are very different. The artist is the artist. The producer and the manager is the producer and the manager. We find ourselves collaborating a lot because we need to understand each other's needs, of course. And that takes a lot of experience for an artist to get into the production mindset, and for the producer to get into the artist mindset. But in general, I can't imagine, dealing with all the classic bureaucratic taxation laws and things. Not to mention that my Hungarian is literally non-existent, so I wouldn't even be able to handle it. So it was very lucky that we met, and we got in line with mainly the basic principles that we believe into in what makes a working environment successful and motivating. This is a bit behind what's behind the name of the company, which is Treehouse Ninjas, right? It's a bit of a synthesis of a treehouse. It's a place that is welcoming, it's a place where you as a kid, you want to be in. It inspires you some nice vibes. But at the same time, ninjas is what brings back that kind of dimension of, okay, but we are people that delivers, not just like youngsters playing around with things. We know our stuff. And so I guess it was this lucky alignment of planets, of stars, that we decided to go for it. We were tired about the same things of our previous experiences at work. And we say, let's just forget about corporate environments together and set up our own thing.
I see. Like, I would love to hear more of your background. I know you came from both movies and games before Treehouse Ninjas, and you guys are, I'm looking forward. I'm watching you guys because what you are talking about, what you get, you know, the spirit behind Trieste Ninjas, I really do think you guys are the trendsetters for what's next. And like you said, I do really believe it's like the smaller studios, they're always innovating. And you're a little bit special, man. Like when I saw your talk, I was like, this guy really sits down and thinks about these things. That's most game developers think about, you know, the next paycheck or going home. Right. But like
you think so?
Yeah. Well, I feel like most of them, I mean, like maybe outside of engineers and designers, it's more about the next project and like a game idea, but to kind of take 10 steps forward, like you do, at least from what I thought in that talk, it's like, wow, he's really thinking about the future of entertainment, like in a way
that's probably what's sticking around with corporate environments that just drives you to you know, like, because the brain power that I experienced around me in both game and movies is insane. Like, I've been sitting in environments where I would feel that the combined brain powers of the people around me was ridiculous. Like, we were applying it to things that we could have, like, been working on the first man of Mars if we really converted the same brain power into something else.
Yeah, I really believe that. I think, you know, everyone's like championing, rightfully so, Elon Musk and all his, like, you know, his next idea, what he's working on. And of course, the biggest talk right now is AI. And when I look back at engineers and games, it's like, man, we've been creating AIs forever, doing like stupid stuff on the streets of GTA. But it's just, you know, that's what we put our efforts into entertainment. But I feel like the same people would be on the bleeding edge of, you know, worldwide technology if they were applying in these tech companies with the same knowledge. And I do actually have friends that were engineers in games that are working at these AI companies after, you know, layoffs or deciding to move on, you know? So I do see that transition of, if we wanted to apply outside of entertainment, our skill set, which we are seeing with what you were saying with the Virgin Movie Games, like, you know, knowing Unreal, knowing Unity before used to be for games, but now I see people at Tesla, people at Google, Facebook, doing the same thing that you were doing before, but with a different purpose. And it just makes me feel really proud that game developers are having that security, first of all, but also having influence outside of just games. And it's not to devalue games. Games are super important. And I think, if anything, we still need games to push the innovation and then apply those tools elsewhere. I do think in other areas, there seems to be a limitation, because if anything, I'm sure, you know, engineers, they're really bored at these tech companies all the time, fixing email notification codes at Netflix or something like mundane and slow. And it seems like the growth happens when they're working on games the most, that really pushes the limit.
That's a double-edged thing, though. Anyway, the a lot of the layoff, I mean, it's like all the business about crunch, never-ending talks about unionizing, whatnot. A lot of that also lies in the how desirable the creative spirit behind the game industry and movie industry, you know, this attractiveness of the entire movie and game production. It brings in so many fresh, young talent that is sort of, how to say, so much soaked in illusion that eventually it's illusions of being hyper creatives, and sometimes you don't realize that what you're facing is an actual job. You're going to be told what to do, and you're going to have to execute it right. And you're not necessarily going to be doing everyday things that you like, and you're not going to necessarily be putting your own personality and creativity in it. So this is why I say it's a double-edged sword, right? Because sometimes these other jobs that in other jobs, I would say that they are a little bit more boring. It's easier to say, I'm going to go home at 6, right? I'm not putting my heart inside of this thing. You know, like, putting your heart can go out of control sometimes and bite you in the ass, if you think about it.
Oh yeah, I think I've always attributed it with office politics, with being in the office. Now that the whole world is remote, I'm also seeing the opposite effect of people overworking to their own detriment, right? Because our computer's right there. I didn't get to this one thing earlier today, but now I can, and I'm finding myself and others, they're working more self-imposed rather than a producer telling us to do so, which is another surprise I didn't really think would be the case. Even working from home for a while before the pandemic, I'm starting to see that, oh, okay, so creativity, it just kind of needs that, I think, sometimes, because it strikes us when it strikes us, right? It's not a clock in, clock out type of thing.
Dangerous.
Yes.
Dangerous. I'm horrible at that. I live in an open space apartment, so I don't even have a door. The computer is looking at me from the other side, you know, constantly. And if I think, thankfully, in Hungary, we don't have super strong restrictions. We are now working from home, but I basically brought back my workstation at the office, and I go there. I'm alone working at the office, but I go there and I find concentration. And then when I detach from job, I am back home, and I don't have a computer at home. I'm really bad at doing that. Yeah, I'm managing that properly.
Yeah, the separation of home and work is difficult when it's at home as well. I do want to kind of talk about, you were mentioning about, emergent gameplay, right? So one of the things that I've been pretty vocal about in recent years, how I really miss the single linear player experience in games, right? That's been kind of diminishing. You know, I grew up on Metal Gear. I grew up on Final Fantasy, and those are very linear. Even though Final Fantasy is like RPG, it's still a very linear story, and I play through those games because of the story. And because of streaming, because of other reasons, single-player games have kind of been on the decline in people purchasing them and people making them, right? I think mostly because of people not making them as much. Unless they're like an indie studio. So the reason why I bring that up is, you know, obviously that is inspired from movies, right? You know, how do we place you as the main character in a linear story? And that's naturally the evolution of games. With the emergent gameplay, what I am excited about is kind of like what you're kind of mentioning with the four rooms, four different perspectives. That's another way of telling a single linear story, but in a way that starts to make sense for this generation of game developers and consumers. I don't know if it does require new technologies like AR or anything. I would like to kind of hear your thoughts about where that can, what that can look like, the evolution of single player linear experiences. Would it be through games, or is it going to be this new genre that is outside of games and movies, or the hybrid approach?
At this point, I mean, if we speak about Limbo, we don't even have to make a life as hard to, you know, just stick with games and movies. We might even just like relax and think about like a hybrid, but just something that is not either, is not one and is not the other. I don't feel the force to call something a movie product or a game product. I'm okay with like some kind of talking about an experience. It's a world. It's, you know, probably at some point we will have its own definition.
Total Recall.
But it's also a matter of tastes. You know, certain people, and also a matter of what mood you're in, because sometimes you do enjoy a little bit more of passive experience. Just like, just tell me a story, take me into it. I don't want to participate at all. Some other times you feel, you know, proactive, and you're just like, I want to drive. I want to be, you know, making the story the way I want. certain people prefer one, certain other prefer the other. So I think it's very open. And if your question is if it's going to be more of a movie thing or a game thing, it's I don't know an option for me, because it's cool. We live and see, I guess. We will wait and see. Does it make sense, my answer, or is completely?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. I think it's a work in progress. Because we saw that thing with Netflix. They tried it a couple of times. I don't know where they left with that, with Bandersnatch and even the Survivor show. My kid was loving it. That's what I saw. I was observing him, mm-hmm. how he was consuming it, and he basically spent way more time watching the Survivor Bear Grylls show than he normally would, because he was just seeing all the different options. And it was very interesting. I think with doing something like through just a movie medium like Netflix was kind of restricting a bit. But I saw that he loved the fact of seeing all these different branches of scenarios telling the same story, but he was choosing his own adventure, like how he wants to consume the show.
Yeah.
And it was very cool to see. He was like 8 or 9 at that age, just watching this, to see how he's reacting to that. And I hope they keep going with that, because again, I think it's like the knee-jerk reaction of like this model, but it's going to take a couple iterations to fully realize what this is. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think that the mystery factor of this limbo that we're talking about, it's probably part of the, why it's attractive. Sometimes if you just think like certain fields of science, like neuroscience, for example, of the human brain in general, or like cosmology and astrology, there are certain science that literally they move or pick those fields specifically for how little we know about it. And that's the fascination of it. It's just like something that we don't have a clue. And you buy a book that is the edition of 2017, and then the same book, but the edition of 2020 has got 7 new chapters of stuff that we didn't have a clue about just a few years before. That's cool for content creators as well, especially when you start getting a little bit more of in a veteran stage, more older, and you're just looking for challenges and things to discover. Then these sort of undefined, weird limbo situations are full of good things to step on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, besides the limbo, we are in a pandemic, and theater chains are kind of falling apart right now. I don't see them ever returning to what it was before. I think people are starting to realize. I feel like the movie theater experience has been on a decline for a while. That's why they keep raising up the prices, because a month later, the movie's on your console or Netflix or something, right, that you can purchase. And the distribution of from projector screen to your inside your home is so much quicker. Like sometimes they have it ready to go, they just go through the theater thing, right? I mean, that's how they do it. And I always look at the Disney experience of how they evolve the theater experience and enhances it as kind of like, this is where movies need to go. I feel like to fill up these rooms, and kind of like what VR was kind of doing with these arcades to introduce people to the system, but setting up something that most people can't experience at home. That's why you get them outside their homes, right? I would love to kind of hear your thoughts of what do you think the movie going experience, if it's going to involve or can it involve to enhance the movie watching experience, or is it going to be a more collaboration stage after this limbo is figured out? To kind of put people back in the seats again.
Yeah. Tricky to tell. The theater was getting crazy expensive anyways. Oh, yeah. was becoming a bit cumbersome. Contents were not as much worth it anymore. If you only exclude some, independent, maybe short movie screenings, refreshing contents of that kind. I'm not that sorry personally to see that stepping aside a bit. The only thing that I would be sorry is certain, it might be certain old school things that I don't know how much you do have in the States, but in Europe they are very popular. Is this like park screening? I mean, you have drive-ins. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you still have those, or is it just an 80s thing?
Yeah, it's a novelty. I think it kind of had like a comeback a bit. Just recently, because of the pandemic, people were staying in their cars to watch movies together.
there is a certain magic into just joining with other people and physically and, you know, sharing the same space. We are analog being anyways, so I wouldn't want to, you know, ditch that completely. Everything else, it's... I'm not sure I belong to the right generation to answer this, because to be honest, it's more about how new generation are coming up. I see babies today that they befriend earlier with a tablet, with an iPad, before than interacting with their mom and dad. So they spend more time in the early stages with swiping right, up and down on a tablet, rather than interacting with analog experiences. And there is a lot of like insane multitasking in our lives today, especially in younger generations, where everybody's getting used to just like bite things rather than taste things for a long time. Things that take time, things that require full focus, like a movie theater forces you to have. You are there and you cannot, I mean, you can go out, but you are stuck with that experience for the next 2 hours or so. New generations, they might be wired a bit differently now, where you constantly need this hyperload of tasks and processes in your brain. Otherwise, you feel like you're uncomfortable, like you're wasting time, you're wasting brain running resources. For what I am concerned personally, I love focusing on one thing at a time. And this is why I say, yeah, theater going away, I mean, old school theaters disappearing, for me is more about the speculation that was happening around it and the franchises, the saturation of all the business that was starting to rotten a bit. But the idea of an old school sitting in front of some cool story with friends and people physically, it's nice. However, again, I recognize I might not be the generation that should define the next step, sadly. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. Like, I think it is asking a lot now for people to sit down and enjoy something for 2 hours straight. I think that's why a lot of TV shows or like series are doing better, because people can consume something in an hour and then pause and leave or completely watch the whole thing at once at their expense. Like anything 2 hours plus is starting to be cumbersome for a lot of people. It's like, oh man, do I want to commit to that? Do I want to watch that? I'm finding myself doing that. And that's a great observation with kids. I see the same thing. It's their attention span is a lot lower. And so to ask and watch and sit still in a stranger building is very different. And especially now that they growing up and maybe there won't be theaters, it'd be just a thing you do once in a while, but it won't be a regular thing anymore. And it is sad. I mean, I think we need to have more of those experiences where we're with other people. And I think this pandemic kind of showed us like we can't completely rely on being online and in social networks to kind of connect.
But if you think about it, it might be sad for us because we grew up a certain way, so we are wired away. But how about if you are born that other way and you're wired away? Maybe it's just natural. For me to work remotely with other colleagues, it might work as during this first round, when we are basically collaborating with people that we shared the same room before. So we basically scattered from an office, who we're talking to, they are people. The more these rounds of work, of like projects closing and reopening, so people leaving and join, and new people joining, they go on and on, and we will all be dealing with colleagues that we have never met, or we had just like started, or just like literally we were introduced to as an outside entity. And then we know rationally that there is a person behind that, but eventually maybe new generation will get wired into considering human interaction more like dealing with other entities than that human people, physical, sharing the same space and breathing your breath, bad breath kind of thing that we have experienced. So it's really weird if you think about it, because, it's going to be a different wiring, a different brain, a different way of growing up.
Yeah. Just remember Black Mirror. That's the show I kept trying to, I can't believe I forgot. But yeah, it's true. Like this new generation, if this is how they're going to get used to meeting people, which is mostly online first, and it's like a plus if we meet them in person. It's a step. Yeah, that's a real wild thought, man. Just working with colleagues you never met, and then somehow have to trust through a third party is kind of a weird way of connecting at first.
But in fact, if I can say, I noticed that some of your previous conversations with the other guests verged a lot on like what's going to be with after pandemic in the gaming industry and all that. And sometimes it's very difficult to say, and we should be more cautious of making predictions, because the idea of working all remotely, this creates a play field that is extremely even. And the business of games, like any other business, eventually lives out of supply and demand laws. So as we all know, if you are skilled X and the other person is also skilled X, but the other person lives in a small town in India, I'm in Manhattan, New York, it's very little that we can do to keep you on board and not hire that other person. Especially, I mean, that might work during this first round, as long as the people are still people. So you are a face that I shared a room with up until a few months ago. When this round of refreshing talents and new hires and, turnarounds of people start leaving behind the idea of people that I share the room with, and we start developing a little bit more into an entities, like generic entities and collaborators that are scattered around the planet, when that principle starts like taking over, there are going to be even less, refrains, restrictions about thinking twice of hiring a person in a convenient country rather than another one that is, if you think about it, in the moment where we are entities rather than people, those principles don't apply as much anymore. And that would reshuffle a lot of things. That even play field is good, but there are lots of things that need to be taken in consideration. And along with that, I would say also the idea of leaving the cities, the real estate speculation in the cities is insane, and losing that is good. But the reason why people are happy to leave the cities is because they are too crowded, they are polluted, they are noisy, they are not quiet, blah, 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 too many people, no parking and so on. But when people leave, they are not going to be crowded. They're not going to be noisy anymore. They're going to be nice again. So I think it's this whole thing will resettle back. It's going to be a jungle for a while, and then we'll resettle back to a sort of a compromise situation, like in between.
Yeah, I think I definitely see that. I mean, I like yourself probably, and many game developers, we've always been kind of grouped up in the city that's super expensive and takes a while to commute to. And I'm already seeing that. I mean, I worked in San Francisco for a while, and I think at first when I was there, I fell in love with the city because it was so different mm-hmm. from where I grew up. And slowly I started to see the trash and start sniffing the smell of what a city is like that.
You're from LA, right?
Yeah, I'm from the LA, but even lower in that Orange County, which is just suburban mm-hmm. Right. life. So, and while I was working there, you know, a lot of locals are always upset because now they can't afford being there because of outsiders kind of pushing them out. You know, higher rent mm-hmm. prices and all that. And because of this pandemic, I feel like you said it's evening out the playing field, but also it's returning these cities to taking care of the locals again, not pushing them out. And it was a good slap on the wrist, in my opinion, because, you know, a lot of these places don't have rent control and people are just trying to, you know, look out for themselves. And that kind of hurts the infrastructure of what makes a city thriving, right? In my opinion, it's not just high rent, right? It's about the people. And if you push everyone out, which is everyone's leaving California right now, because now they realize like, hey, maybe I don't have to stay and live in a closet for thousands of dollars every day, you know?
Yeah.
It is a reset, as you kind of put it, that I think overall, there are some sacrifices to kind of figure out, but overall a better thing. And although competition is higher, like you said, candidate X versus another candidate X with similar skill sets, but is much cheaper. I think it is healthy for developers and creators to kind of be on their toes, because I think there was a certain level of comfort that artists were kind of sitting idle with. And as a, you know, being in the United States especially, I've always felt that was dangerous. Like, you know, you're just here. That's the only advantage you have. But as soon as that's gone, they're going to hire someone that's cheaper. And that's, you kind of see that with game development. You're always looking for someone cheaper. The junior artists are getting scarily good, right? Because of the resources online. And this is another warning shot for a lot of my senior colleagues to like, hey, wake up, stay on your toes, man. Can't be falling asleep at the wheel, because it, more than ever now, your job is at stake. And the answer is not to find solution externally. Internally, you got to remember why you love being in this industry and be competitive, you know?
That's up. I couldn't agree more, to be honest. Like all the times that I hear about unionization and crunch time and exploitment of talent. So many things do make sense, but what really boils down to the reason why people, most people, I think, struggle to say, no, I'm not staying late, is insecurity and being afraid of being replaced. So eventually things will boil down to invest in ourselves, invest in our own unreplaceability, which is a big word, but like in the moment with what you can be replaced quickly by a junior or by even a script. Well, that's something that you really have to take action on. I think that feeling of confidence of what I do is very valuable and very hard to replace for the company that I work for puts you in the best condition also to say, no, I won't do overtime if I don't want to. It will boil down to that eventually. So this whole leveled play field is just converging towards an ending that like sort of a stabilization that involves that ingredient, no matter what. It feels like it's the way things are going to have to go. Mm-hmm.
And I've been kind of warning developers for a while, for a few years, because of, I think, like most, when we work at these development studios, you're always working with outsourcing, managing with outsourcing. I mean, most studios can't do without external development or outsourcing, as you guys can probably imagine. And then you know, at first, you know, I remember friends kind of laughing at the idea that China would somehow figure that this mystery out of making a game, right? For a while, they were figuring it out. But like, you look at Wukong, which is, you know, the Monkey King game that's going viral every day. There's a new screenshot, right? That's a team of 30 Chinese developers. And it stands toe-to-toe to God of War, which is like 1,000+ developers. Yeah. And I got to stand back. It's like, guys, you got to tighten up your belt, man. Start to be hungry again, because it's time to really step it up. Look, they've caught up and overpassing us in Western development right now, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, the Chinese are scaring me in their speed, because they're cheaper, they work faster, and they work 20 hours out of 24. So
yeah,
if you want to give yourself a chance, you know, better start studying and not being complacent again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There is the aspect of overall of the, you know, biological life changing your performance, which actually I think we are maybe culturally more considered about in the Western countries.
Yeah.
So that's where that exactly where unionization is very important. That the idea of like, I'm 50, I'm 40, even just like past 40, you don't have the same edge and energy. So when you're 25, that's it. Yep. It's nature. And so that is something that it makes sense to protect each other and understand a little bit. But you know, that doesn't justify somebody that is like 26 years old and just trying to find excuses to not having the confidence to refuse over time. Mm-hmm. By calling constantly higher level entities like unions, like the industries, like the managers, like the government, and blah, blah, blah. These are all terms that eventually are very useful and comfortable for us to delegate the talk and the complaints to things that are very far from us and that away from our own responsibilities, which is basically what you just said before.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of unionization is like a whole episode in itself, and I'm in the fence with there needs to be protection. Obviously, we're a young industry, so we haven't hit that mark. I think I met my first over 60-year-old developer maybe 5-6 years ago, and he was the lead engineer of that company. So I was like, wow, these guys are rare. I don't really see a lot of over 60-year-old or in their late 50s, right? But more than ever, it's happening. Obviously, we're aging, right? And we need to start taking care of each other and holding companies responsible, because like you said, there's a deteriorating factor to being creative, right? There's only so many lead roles in every company. So eventually you're going to find yourself competing against a younger self, and it is silly to not educate the younger developers, to let them know as a warning sign, like, this is going to be you, in 20 years. And I think I agree with you. A lot of youngsters don't think that far. They're just trying to get theirs, and move on with their life. We just don't have that tying factor, right? An organization that thinks about these problems and fighting for us on behalf of game developers worldwide. And it's weird, and it's one of those controversial things where it doesn't have to be, and it's dividing us a bit, and we have yet to have any forward momentum. I think a few years back there was some, but now it's kind of dying down again.
And it goes in waves. It
goes in waves, and it's sad because, you know, both you and I are getting older, dude, and eventually we're going to be our ideas are not going to be worth anything because we're so out of it. And it is scary to think that our industry, even though it's so successful, even during a pandemic, even during the housing crisis of 2008, right, that we don't have anything in place to take care of each other. At a certain age, you're scaring me a bit now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, no, but I don't want to be sad. I don't want to be like negative at all. It's just, is just actually I want to be positive because to solve problems eventually you want to just like tackle, you know, in Latin countries we say to take the bull by the horn. Mm-hmm. Which means it's just like get down to the problem is eventually talking about governments and unions and the industry, this world, the industry, it literally does. The industry is the people. It's you, me, and what we do today and tomorrow. Eventually, we either get down to that or, these problems will always stay. The people will make the difference. The people will make the powers. When people means you and I, not the industry. Mm-hmm.
I will end it with this, right? And this kind of ties back to the overall topic because we are at the 1 hour mark. Where I see the convergence of moving games being our own way of carving this path for ourselves of in securing our seniority in companies that are tech giants that have these retirement plans in place, because you're probably seeing it too, right? We have friends at Facebook now because of how both these engines are being widely used outside of games. We have friends at Google. We have friends at, you know, obviously Oculus, and then Google, and many other places, right? Pretty much car companies, even like Tesla, are utilizing Unreal developers or Unity developers, right? So to me, it's very exciting to be. Cool. All right. So for the time being, we are taking care of ourselves. And I'm trying to give attention to that as much as possible because it's like we have options now. We used to be in this like recycling garbage that is known as game development industry, right? But now it's like, hey, there's avenues now that pays really well, really good job security. Kind of boring, but you know, overall, when you're older, kind of boring and pays really well sounds really good. But like these are legit companies, not in all cases, that are probably working on really exciting things beyond the scope of entertainment. So to be fair, you know, it's all super awesome. So it's a way of, again, kind of what you're probably warning your colleagues and I'm warning my friends is like, keep on your toes, pay attention to what's going out there. And do something about it. And now there's avenues to do something about it. You don't have to just keep complaining about your boss at work. It's like you can go to a tech giant company and take care of yourself. It's really awesome. Work on the Mandalorian. Yeah, you like Star Wars, right? Go work on Mandalorian. It's like, oh man, it's so awesome. So Or make your own company. Be the change. It's like, what's the difference about you being in your office versus being in the office for yourself, you know? Now more than ever with the pandemic, it's like there's no difference anymore.
I mean, indie games are, if personally, if you ask me, in quality and contents are beating pretty much every AAA. I'm not a big gamer myself. I'm not a frequent gamer, but if I was one, I would mainly look into the indie scene rather than the AAA one.
Yeah, it's definitely seeing so many avenues to do things now. I'm really excited about the next couple of years for many things, what the hybrid industry is going to look like, AR, you know, what Facebook is using Oculus as like phones every 2 months now, which is all right. They're really innovating on that. There's a lot of exciting things to do. With that being said, like I mentioned before, we are at the hour mark. I want to thank you for sitting down and teaching the audience, but mostly for myself. I wanted you to talk because you seem so different from most developers that I talk to.
I hope in a good sense.
it's a good thing. It's like, okay. So this is where I kind of hand the mic over to you to promote, give a shout out, give attention to where people can find you, whatever you want to talk about.
Well, you just check out our works at Treehouse Ninja. By the way, can I say that we're recruiting?
Oh, go for it, man. Yeah, of course.
It's like shameless plug. Yeah, we're recruiting. So we're just like looking for crazy people that like are very talented and want to join our company at treehouseninjas.com. Go for it. And everybody stay safe.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for talking. I was super excited to talk to you and I was not disappointed. You give me a lot of things to think about to plot out for myself. Yeah, which is a lot, which is good, which is great. I do want to ask you one last thing. It's like, you kind of mentioned a little bit about post-pandemic, what life will be, and there's going to be a little limbo state of figuring that out. What benefits, just to kind of leave on a high note, do you see coming out of this for developers of all industries?
I think that's this forcing people to be on their own feet, on their toes, like we mentioned, is going to be painful a bit at the beginning. But this scenario of experienced artists and professionals taking different avenues and being more independent, it will scatter around the creativity, you know, and get everything tied much less to the huge monopolizing corporation that literally limit creativity, and you know, have this new renaissance of independent creators that are more modular. You see, like Netflix animation, everything is getting this sort of new horizon of there is much more driven by smaller entities, smaller creative entities, but centralized by a central organization that just they only report to from a management standpoint. But eventually, the creativity comes from small entities. I think that's what's going to happen. It's just more up to smaller things that are created by independent independent people and less centralized, monopolized aristocracy of big studios and production places. If it makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I see that's it myself. Like my friends and family kind of liking the idea of remote work and being their own boss a bit, right? Although they're employed, right? But their time is now for them to decide how to utilize. And that's a huge, at least that was my introduction to entrepreneurship. Freelancing, any of that. I think it's really healthy for artists to kind of have multiple things going. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are waking up to that finally, outside the 9-to-5 stuff. So it's super exciting. That means, you know, more indie projects, more creations basically from artists around the world. Eventually, it only leads to good things. Self-management, more discipline.
Yeah. A little bit more, a few more politically incorrect things, which I honestly miss from all times. So, you know, you remember those games like Simon the Sorcerer? They were popular on the time. Mm-hmm. If you check some of the jokes in those games, they would never exist today. Impossible. They would just be black.
I think we're leaning too far in there. I want people to be provocative because it promotes thoughts. It promotes conversation. Yeah. It promotes discussion. And if you're playing safe all the time, we're going to 1984 and that time frame, and it's never good to kind of keep our mouth shut all the time. But I want to thank you, man, for coming on and letting us inside your mind a bit.
Thank you for your invitation. It was a very nice chat.
All right, thanks, you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Have a good evening. I mean, have a good day for you.
Yeah, you too.
Okay, bye bye. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you are liking the podcast, go to the Apple iTunes store and give Game Dev Unchained a 5-star rating. This will help spread the joy and love and exposure for the podcast, and we thank you very much. If you want to continue the conversation, go to our Discord, which can be found on our website, www.gamedevunchained.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at BlueChamps, BlueChamps. You want to catch these episodes live every Tuesdays and Thursdays, go to twitch.tv/blue_champs. Email me any of your concerns or questions that you want me to read aloud at the beginning of each episode at info@gamedevunchained.com. And if you want to further support us and help unlock the next feature, which is the voicemail feature, go to patreon.com/BlueChamps. This gives listeners a chance to kind of call in, leave a message for both me and the guests to answer your deepest, darkest questions and comment on your deepest, darkest secrets. Thank you, everybody.